Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is NASCAR driver Tony Breininger, inviting you to make a pit stop at Raising Cane's for my favorite craveable chicken fingers. Turbocharge your order and get it even faster when you order online or with the Raising Cane's app. Raising Cane's chicken fingers, one love. Raising Cane's is not affiliated with NASCAR.
Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. 2010 is only 2 months old, and already there have been notable earthquakes in Argentina, Venezuela, Japan, California, and most destructively in Haiti. Then early on Saturday, the fifth biggest quake ever recorded hit Chile. The death toll is over 700 and climbing, 2 million said displaced. Chile is no stranger to earthquakes, but this particular region had not seen such a large one since 1835. Charles Darwin observed it on the voyage of the Beagle. This hour, On Point, the quake in Chile on the heels of Haiti, and a seismologist's view of all the rumbling and destruction we've seen. You can join the conversation. What next? What's your question on quakes? And what have you heard from Chile? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Phone lines being what they are in the aftermath of the quake, we've been putting out calls, and we'll bring you voices from Chile as we get them. But first, to find out what happened in the Earth's crust that hit Chile so hard, we turn to Jen Lin. He is geophysicist at the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution. He's studied the giant 1960 Chilean earthquake and the recent quake in Haiti. Right now, he's in California at the U.S. Geological Survey's National Center for Earthquake Research, poring over the data coming out of Chile. Jen Lin, thank you very much for being with us.
Hello, Tom. Thank you for having me.
Please tell us what happened early Saturday morning in the Earth's crust that brought us this very large quake.
So in early Saturday morning, we had a magnitude 8.8 earthquake. This is one of the top 10 largest earthquakes that scientists have ever recorded. And during this quake, about 500 kilometers of the fault line ruptured, and the maximum rupture or displacement on the fault is close to about 10 meters. And this earthquake also caused a noticeable tsunami, which reached Hawaii about 15 hours later, and Japan about one day later.
Now, we picture Chile, we know, long and thin along the coast, the west coast of South America there. This quake, a couple of hundred miles south of Santiago, sort of somewhere in near the center of the country, and the epicenter offshore, Jen Lin?
The epicenter, in fact, is onshore. However, where the things ruptured is offshore. So where this earthquake have the maximum amount of deformation or shaking, in this case, actually was offshore.
Mm-hmm. Now, this was 8.8, one of the top 10 in history, recorded history, you remind us. Hades was, I think, a 7.0 quake in January. Yet I've seen you quoted saying that the Chile's earthquake here was 200 or 300 times more powerful than Hades. I think for a lot of us, we don't really understand the Richter scale and system. How does that work? What does it mean that it was 200 or 300 times more powerful?
Okay, so there are two scales that scientists used to measure how important or how big an earthquake is. The first one is called Richter scale. In fact, that is no longer being used. We are using something similar, but a better way to measure that. Now, the Richter scale measures the total amount of energy released by an earthquake. In this Richter scale, it doesn't matter where it has occurred.
Mm-hmm.
So, as you already mentioned, the Saturday's earthquake have a total energy release, in this case, about 250 to 500 times greater than that of the January 12 earthquake in Haiti. So now you might ask, so if this earthquake is 500 times greater, why don't we see as much of the damage as was the case of January 12 Haiti earthquake? Now, in this case, there was a second scale the scientists are used, which is called a Mercalli intensity scale. It's called Mercalli modified intensity scale.
Okay.
Now, that one is really important for measure how much shaking is on the ground, say, close to where your house is.
So powerful quakes can have a different level of shaking, and we're told that building codes are simply much better and in Chile than in Haiti, but you're saying that the quake itself was different in its effect on the ground?
That's correct. So we have both factors actually come into play. Number one, this earthquake was much more powerful in the sense of releasing lots more energy. However, it is the most of the shaking zone actually is in the ocean. So now, kind of follow away from your house.
Mm-hmm. Now, we know that Chile is on the Pacific Rim, part of the Ring of Fire, seismologically very active. But I don't know, was this earthquake at all related in tectonic terms, in seismological terms? Is this related to what happened in Haiti or not, likely not?
In seismology or tectonic terms, this fault actually is not directly related to Haiti. They are too far apart. In this case, you have a giant tectonic plate, which is called Nazca Plate, which is kind of heavy. It went down underneath the South American plate on which Chile sits.
And that's what's moving here and moving a lot of Chile. John Lynn, we've got a lot of questions for you with all the activity we've seen on the quake front lately. We're very glad to have you with us. We're going to turn in just a moment to a voice from Santiago, Chile, here from CNN. An emotional family reunion in the aftermath of the weekend quake in Chile. It's been tough. 2 million people displaced, 711 we heard at the news at the top of the hour, now the latest. That probably going to grow. Here's a tearful father in Concepcion. This is a couple of hundred miles south of Santiago, the capital of Chile, in that same recording, describing how he was reunited with his young son after the earthquake.
I was in anguish. I didn't sleep. I was desperate. I didn't see my family in the house. So I was out all day and all night searching near the river. Nothing. And just now, we went up again, and the police told us there was a child, and I thought it to be my child.
Thought it to be his. Many families, many parents and children swept up in this. John Lynn in California, please stand by. We're joined right now from Santiago, Chile, by Jorge Schaulson. He's an attorney in the capital of Chile there, former Speaker of the House of Representatives in Chile from 1990 to 98 with the Party of Democracy, a columnist in Chile. Jorge Schaulson, thank you very much for joining us.
You're welcome. How are you?
We're well. First of all, just to be clear, did you feel the impact of the quake in Santiago, the capital?
Yes, I did. In fact, I live on the 23rd floor of an apartment building in the city, and I don't know if your listeners can really understand what an 8.8 tremor is. I've been through many of those, many earthquakes, but never through one that is so huge. And the movement was amazing. Luckily, we didn't suffer any damage.
In the capital, in the capital itself, we're told not much destruction. Most of it further south. Is that right? When you
it's correct. Here, things are pretty much back to normal. Of course, the phone lines are down. Public transportation is slow, and a lot of internet systems are not working properly. But slowly, the city is coming back to normal.
Now, Chileans are very familiar with earthquakes. You're in a very active region. As I understand it, school children there regularly have earthquake drills, so people are prepared. Is that right?
Yeah, I think by and large, people are prepared. Construction standards are very good, but sometimes they are not followed. And I think that is the reason why we have had some new apartment buildings collapse. And probably an investigation will follow as to what went wrong. But definitely, especially in low-income housing, I think some construction companies were cutting corners, and this tragedy will bring that to the fore.
A 15-story building toppled in the south there. Your outgoing president, Michelle Bachelet, calling this an emergency unparalleled in the history of Chile. You've got tremors a lot, but this is on a different scale, I guess, Jorge.
I think it's true, and the number of people estimated to have died, although the figure has not been released from the government, but it's kind of an official figure that will come out in the next few hours or maybe tomorrow. It's reaching 1,400 and probably still going up.
So going higher and higher, and a lot of aftershocks over the weekend. Could you feel those in Santiago as well?
Right, but you know what happens after such a big one, the aftershocks, although strong, don't seem like much because you are fearful that another one like the original quake will come about. In fact, in the 1960s, we had a major earthquake bigger than this, mm-hmm. which went up to number 10, I believe, in the Richter scale, the biggest earthquake ever recorded in the world. And we had one day, and the next day, or 12 hours after, another one came by. So people are afraid, but the aftershocks have not matched the original earthquake by any means, and I think things are quieting down now.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking today about the quake in Chile on the heels of the quake in Haiti, and what it shows us about two different countries and what we see in this spate of seismic activity. Here's more victims of the earthquake this weekend in Chile, talking with CNN about the desperation on the streets there and some of the looting that followed.
It's going to keep happening because it's been two nights of this and people are desperate. They're desperate. And the only way to survive is to come and get what you need.
We don't have anything. We don't have water. We don't have food. We have money to buy, but we can't buy because stores are closed.
Jorge Schalson joins us from Santiago, an attorney there and former Speaker of the House in Chile. And from Menlo Park, California, we're joined by John Lin, a geophysicist who's been watching activity all over the world. You can join the conversation at 800-423-8255. Jorge Schalson, in Chile, what about the looting at this point and the disposition of the military? I know it's been put out to help with relief. Is it also keeping order in some of these southern communities?
Yeah, I think that will happen. The government, I think, was not very fast in reacting. It delayed calling the army, and so a lot of people did not have basic services or help coming their way. People were sleeping in the streets, and like your reporting says, with no water or food. And one of the reasons why this happened, I believe, is that, as you know, we had presidential elections a few weeks ago, or a month ago, just about.
Yes.
So the government is on its way out.
Right. You're in transition when this
right.
big quake
and
comes.
The new government is on its way in. So obviously the government is winding down, packing up, shredding papers and all of that things that you have to do when you have a transition, especially when the coalition is changing after 20 years. So I think the government was totally psychologically unprepared, and with a lot of the people who are meant to handle these emergencies ready to go home. And probably that slowed the process, and the reaction has been not the best. In fact, the president of the Republic on Saturday morning said that there had been no tsunami. But overnight, between Friday and Saturday, we had a huge tsunami here, and probably a good number of the people who are dead or disappeared mm-hmm. will be on account of that tsunami.
This is hitting coastal Chile there in the aftermath of the quake. And, of course, the president, Michelle Bachelet, on her way out, and the new president, Sebastián Piñera, coming in. This is the first conservative president elected in Chile since the end of the dictatorship of Augusto Pinochet in 1990.
Right.
Yeah, so a big change there, and we'll talk about that as well. Jorge Schalson, please stand by in Santiago, Chile. John Lynn is with us, a geophysicist, joining us today from the U.S. Geological Survey's National Center for Earthquake Research in California. Let's go to our callers, Ray in Somerset, Kentucky. Ray, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
In December through February of 1811 and 1812, there were four earthquakes on the New Madrid Fault that were close to 8 in magnitude.
This runs right up through the kind of the center of the United States.
Yeah, it's Nashville's about the same distance Santiago is from the current quake.
Mm-hmm.
Is America prepared for any kind of catastrophe like that?
Let us pick it up with our geophysicist, John Lynn. I don't know if you look at preparedness. I know you look at tectonic plates. Could the United States experience a quake on this magnitude in the central region, the New Madrid Fault, or elsewhere? And do you see this country as prepared to handle it?
Yeah, New Madrid Fault is seismically active, but it's seismically active in slightly different way than the seismicity in California. The difference is being that in California, for example, along the San Andreas Fault, which to the north runs across the Bay Area in San Francisco, mm-hmm. where I am now,
mm-hmm.
To the south, it went all the way through the north of Los Angeles Basin. Now, the San Andreas Fault has been moving constantly, and that's why we have lots more earthquake in California. Now, New Madrid Fault, in my point of view, is even more dangerous. This is the reason. Because the stress buildup in New Madrid Fault is somewhat slower, but it's still being moving.
Yes.
So if it's somewhat slower, the problem is that the frequencies between two larger earthquakes are much longer in New Madrid Fault. Because of that, and most people, if they are not aware of this earthquake potential, in fact, they will be less prepared than the area where you have a lot of earthquake. And this is a great analogy to Haiti and Chile as well. In Chile, because there have been, on average, about every three years, you have a magnitude 7 and above. So you are constantly reminded you are living on top of these earthquake bombs, so you are prepared. However, in Haiti, Port-au-Prince, the last devastating earthquake was 240 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's a long time ago, and most people forgot. In fact, you have a major fault lines next to you that your ancestor has experienced major earthquake, but your grandparents have not. So that's a very important lesson for other parts of the world where you could have earthquakes, but earthquake frequency are much less. Those areas I would consider even more dangerous.
Jorge Schalson,
the area which happens all the time.
Yeah, Jorge Schalson in Santiago, we just have you for another minute. I know you travel in the United States plenty. Do you see the U.S. Is the U.S. as prepared as Chile when it comes to dealing with earthquakes?
Well, I don't know about your civil defense apparatus and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
Leaving Katrina aside,
yes,
perhaps I would.
It's a lot to leave aside, but nevertheless.
Mm-hmm. You are not, but I have a feeling that construction in the United States is very different. You use a lot of wood for houses.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the system by which you build skyscrapers are totally different. You use a lot less steel, and you use a lot of metal planks. So I really don't know how they would withstand a major earthquake. I have no way of knowing it. In Chile, the construction level, it's very good. But like I said, a lot of people cut corners, so those buildings are failing. And also we have old buildings from colonial times.
Sure.
That are made of, they don't use concrete, but mm-hmm. some form of dirt, which is packed. And some of them have been okay for 100 years, but finally they can't take it no more and they fall down, which is what we are seeing today. Mm.
Jorge Shalson, former Speaker of the House in Chile, we're grateful to you for being with us, and we wish your country well in its recovery from this big, big quake. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much, and all the best to you.
Thank you. Let's get another call from Scituate, Massachusetts. Mark, you're on the air with John Lin.
Hi, Tom. I'm curious if Dr. John Lin could comment. My kids are actually studying geology in elementary school right now, and one thing they've learned is that the geologic timescale is very long, that this stuff takes a long time to unfold. Does that suggest we should be expecting lots more of this kind of activity, particularly around this Pacific plate that he was referring to before? Should we be looking at more of this? I mean, can it take decades for this kind of movement to play out, or after a couple of years, should it calm down again? You know, what's sort of the expectation looking forward? How much can they predict?
We'll look at that, Mark, and thank you for your call. John Lin, you hear Mark's question. I'm reading here in the New York Times, Andrew Revkin writing that the message of the Chile quake, he says, is clear. He says it's get ready. The seismic clock is ticking, and he's looking at the Pacific sort of ring of fire, says a prime case is Oregon, the Cascadia Fault on the seabed off the northwest coast. What about, is there any way of knowing whether we're in a flurry of quakes here, or is it many years away? Is it, we just have to wait and see? How does it work?
We don't have scientific evidence at this point to suggest the Earth is more dangerous today than, say, a decade ago. However, we should be reminded of the fact that the Earth plates are constantly moving. They have been moving for hundreds of millions of years. So if you put all the fault lines of the world together, it's very likely that we will have another major earthquake somewhere in the world along some of these fault lines. So to answer the questions from your kid, the Earth today is just as dangerous as was yesterday and was about 10 years ago. And we are living in this dangerous war where the plates are rubbing against each other. And every time when you have an earthquake release the Earth's stress, at some point of the war, the other plates' stress are building up. So you have these kind of popcorns around the world which are firing up kind of in cycle.
Wow. Let's go to more questions for you. From Omaha, Nebraska, Tom, you're on the air with John Lin.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Well, what's your question?
My quick question is this. You've had a really excellent discussion on the plate tectonics, and that answered a lot of my question. But the other piece that still hangs for me is we're all aware of what heating and cooling does, expansion and contraction from everything to your sidewalk and your driveway outside to mountain ranges.
Mm-hmm.
Does global warming, the few degrees of temperature that are changing the ocean's temperature, what impact might that have on what's going on with pressures around the tectonic plates?
Tom, thank you. John Lin, any possible interaction between global warming and cooling and the tectonic plates?
Tom, that's a great question. In one way, it does. It does have some effect on earthquake of some specific locations. Now, we should be reminded that in our geological history, the Earth has experienced many periods of extreme coldness and extreme kind of hotness. So it is possible that these global warming will have some effect. I would say one probably the most likely effect will be something we call the gas hydrate area. Those are kind of CO2 which has been compressed and installed in some depths in the shallow part of the Earth. Sometime with global warming and change of the sea level, even just by tens of meters, and it's going to change the pressure on top of these kind of gas zones, and which could trigger some of the release of gases in those areas, which will help to trigger earthquakes. But I think those are kind of local phenomena, but something that we should take into account with global warming.
But tens of meters change in sea level, that would be over thousands, presumably, of years, or many, many thousands even.
That's obviously true. But, you know, in some area of the Earth's crust, it's just a few meters of changes of the sea level are going to change the pressure enough for those CO2 stored inside the Earth's crust to get released to possibly trigger kind of local landslide.
Interesting.
And that, however, is going to be a local phenomenon.
John Lynn, please stand by. We want to hear more from Chile. We're joined right now from Santiago, the capital, by Pascal Bonifoy. She's a Chile correspondent for the international news site Global Post. She lost a relative, an aunt, I think, in the quake, and has just returned home from the funeral. Pascal, we're sorry for your family's loss, and thank you for joining us.
Hi, Tom. No problem.
Where was your, was it your aunt? Where did she, I'm sorry, where did she die?
She was, she's an aunt. She was 90 years old and was already very ill with heart ailments, and she was being taken care of by a nurse, and at the time of the earthquake, she got up, withstood it, and just a few minutes later, had a heart attack and died.
I'm sorry for your family.
Directly related, but it's the earthquakes speeded it up.
Yep, we understand, and we're sorry for your family's loss. Pascal, what are you hearing from your fellow correspondents in southern Chile or further south, nearer the epicenter of the quake? What does it look like there?
It looks pretty grim. There's been a lot of problems with looting and vandalism that have been escalating since Saturday afternoon. Yesterday, President Bachelet announced a state of catastrophe, which means that the military is going to take control of the streets and contribute in the rescue efforts, supposedly 10,000 troops. But so far, only 2,000 have gone to one region, and another 2,000 are set to, by today, be in another region. And it's definitely not enough. Even though there was a curfew imposed last night, in the two most devastated regions, from 9 p.m. to 6 a.m., there was still looting and violence throughout the night. Dozens of people were arrested, but nonetheless, people were still afraid because there are hordes of people that are not only just going into supermarkets, which by now are completely empty of food, but they're also now going into abandoned apartment buildings, people's homes, just taking whatever they can. So especially in small towns and in cities like Concepcion, which is a major coastal city in the south, It's kind of like a far west. There's not enough police. The military hasn't arrived in full yet, and people fear for their security. But on the other hand, food is an extreme problem because a lot of people lost their homes. Some people didn't just lose their homes; they lost their entire towns. There's fishing hamlets and coastal cities and tourist centers. We were just ending summer vacation over the weekend when the earthquake struck. So there are a lot of people there, and they were completely wiped out. And we don't even know, and the government doesn't have an official figure for the number of people who have disappeared.
And this is wiped out by tsunamis.
By tidal waves. Mm-hmm. Yeah, waves between 3 and 15 meters that went way inland. Coastal towns were completely washed away. And all of these residents, well, hundreds of them are disappeared. We just don't know how many. And hundreds more went up to the hills, went up to the wherever they could with what they had on.
2 million said to be displaced in Chile. Pascal Bonifoy in Santiago with Global Post. We're grateful to you for your report today, and thank you very much for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the quake in Chile on the heels of the quake in Haiti, what it shows us about two different countries, and what we see in this spate of seismic activity. On Saturday, Chilean President outgoing Michelle Bachelet spoke in a nationally televised address to the people of Chile.
This earthquake was of great magnitude, and we have a great task ahead of us in terms of the immediate emergency and in terms of reconstruction. It will not be easy. It requires time and resources, but more than anything, the will and collaboration of each one of us.
And here, the president of Chile there, and here in an interview with TVN, this is just Spanish, but a woman in Concepcion hit hard by the quake, saying the looting going on there is necessary because people do not have basic needs met. You can join the conversation this hour. What are your thoughts on this quake and Chile? What if a quake hits in this country? Have we built to withstand? Are we ready to respond? John Lin has been with us. He's a geophysicist at the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution, Cape Cod, Massachusetts. But today he joins us from Menlo Park, California, in the U.S. Geological Survey's National Center for Earthquake Research. He's been looking over all the data coming out of Chile, knows the global picture very, very well. We'll hear more on Chile. Let's hear from our listeners, Patricia in Quincy, Massachusetts. Patricia, you're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Yes.
I'm very worried about my country. I come from Santiago, but all my family comes from Santa Cruz, which is between Concepcion and Santiago.
Oh, so that's right in the difficult zone. Have you heard from them, Patricia?
Yes, I have. Unfortunately, nobody was hurt, but my grandmother and my aunt lost their house. They are alive by a miracle. And I would like to see if there's any possibility of showing on air, telling people, how can we help from here, from the United States, from the international community? How can the international community help?
Patricia, we will look for those. It's so early yet. I don't know what is out there yet, but we will look for those locations where Americans can reach out and help Chileans, and we will post them at our website as we get them. And I thank you for your call, and hope your family does well there. Thank you very much for that. Let's get a call from Buffalo, New York. Robert, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. Oh, by the way, I was in an earthquake once myself in Idaho. My sister has been telling me for years, and she still tells me now that she graduated from earth sciences at Buffalo, that New York State sits on one of the largest faults in the world. And, well, this may have some interest to you, Tom, if we is such a fault, it could, you know, affect as far as Boston.
You've got our attention. I mean, people all over the country between the Pacific Rim and the New Madrid and East Coast. John Lynn, what about, we haven't spoken about the Northeast in the United States. What's the seismic situation there?
I also, Robert, I also live in Massachusetts. So your question is also a question of my own concern. So what happened in New York is this. The Atlantic Ocean, which is the ocean separate between us and Europe, in the geological past, was closed and open and closed and open a couple of times. Now, during these opening and closing, it turned out that it left these kind of rift zones, which runs very much under the state of New York. So as a result, in the state of New York, you have these pre-existing rift zones, which means fault lines, which are coming from the previous episode of opening and closing of the Atlantic Oceans. So whenever you have a fault zones, if there was any stress accumulations on some of these faults, and one of these days, some of these faults will pop. Now, how would I compare those faults to the faults in California or in Alaska? I would say the differences are the stress, the rate at which stress are accumulating in the state of New York is much, much slower than those in California or Alaska. So But as I pointed out earlier, in area where you have slow stress accumulation, actually sometimes could be even more dangerous, because, not because you have more earthquake or more frequent earthquake, but because people let their guards down. Because then they say, oh, yeah, this area has been safe for a long time, so I assume that I'm safe.
Here's another question from Brian on Facebook in Chile's neighborhood, and he asks, can seismic activity trigger events like the recent break-off of a great big chunk of ice off the Antarctic ice shelf? What about that, John Lin?
If you have a larger earthquake closer to those ice shelves, indeed, you could trigger some of these kind of ice break-off. Now, another thing to consider are the tsunamis. Scientists now have recorded the tsunamis by putting seismometers on some of these ice breaks. And so tsunami waves actually could reach all around the world and could be recorded by some of these ice. And however, most of the ice break of Antarctica, it has been shown to be something more related to the weather, related to the climate change.
And climate change. John Lin, please stand by. We're kind of juggling big seismological questions here and big questions and concerns about Chile in this hour, but they're both very much on people's minds, especially against the backdrop of Haiti just in January. Joining us from Miami right now is John Price. He's Managing Director for Business Intelligence at Kroll Associates, responsible for Latin America. John Price, welcome back to On Point. Thanks for joining us today.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
We've all seen Haiti for weeks now and its problems. Talk to us about Chile and how it's situated to deal with this earthquake.
Sure. Let me preface my remarks by sharing with you that my great-grandfather is Chilean, so I have about 300 cousins in Chile, many of whom are in Concepcion. And one of the most agonizing things is trying to get in touch with people and finding out if they're okay or not. So I feel for everyone who's called in with the same agonizing experience. But the silver lining is that Chile is better prepared than perhaps any country in this hemisphere, including the U.S. and Canada, to deal with earthquakes. The city of Concepcion itself, in fact, was razed to the ground four times between the 16th and 17th century before they moved it away from the coast a few miles inland.
Just for this reason.
It's gone through. Exactly. It's right on a seismic area, epicenter area. So it's suffered major quakes in this century or last century in 39 and 60. And as a result, it's already been commented, the building codes in Chile really are better enforced than they are anywhere else in Latin America. And as a result, the exception noted by Mr. Schausen earlier in the show, that most of the buildings constructed are built to withstand major earthquakes, maybe not quite at this level, but certainly most of the range of earthquakes that Chile will suffer in its time.
Nevertheless, we've seen lots of images of collapsed bridges and destroyed highways. Bus service is closed down because of that to the south right now. Communities along the coast hit very hard, even wiped out. There's going to be a huge rebuilding challenge here. How is Chile situated to do that?
Well, in fact, the early estimates show that it could cost $30 to $40 billion, which is somewhere around 20% of the nation's GDP.
Huge.
Which is a massive amount of money. But Chile's uniquely situated. It's the only country in Latin America that can sort of exercise Keynesian economics. It can actually spend money when the economy is shrinking. And the reason they do this is, first of all, they have a history of prudence of governing, whether it was right-wing or left-wing government in place. One thing they always had in common was fiscal prudence. And the bonanza that's come as a result of high copper prices in the – particularly from 2003 to 2008 created a fund that was kept offshore in dollars so as to not create inflation at home of over $20 billion of windfall. And that money will be dipped into as well to rebuild the infrastructure around south-central Chile that has been most affected.
So this goes, I think, all the way back to Salvador Allende and the nationalization of some big mines and resources decades ago. It's kind of in the legacy of that, I guess, this fund.
Sure, sure. I mean, Chile went through a very difficult political period with the coup that ended Allende's life and ended his government and 17 years of military rule. But one of the things that even Pinochet recognized was that the copper fields and the Codelco copper company was necessary as a national asset and necessary as a tax base to help his country, and has remained a nationalized company up till present day, and contributes disproportionately to the tax base of Chile, and as a result of this offshore rainy day fund.
Let's get more calls. Africa calling from Iowa City. Africa, you're on the air.
Hi. Hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I'm originally from Concepcion. Still have family and lots of close friends there. Mm-hmm. And we actually still own a house in the neighboring port town, Talcahuano, mm-hmm. where that ocean surge occurred.
Is it standing, your house? Do you know?
No, we don't know. We haven't been able to contact people there. Mm-hmm. We have heard from people secondhand, but so naturally my mom and I are considering going back to Concepcion to help family mm-hmm. and to assess the damage of our house. But Chileans that we have been in contact with in Valparaíso and Santiago, they've tried to dissuade us from going, saying that aftershocks could occur like 1 to 3 months afterwards. And so I guess my question for the seismologist is, like, what is the probability that a really big earthquake can happen afterwards? I know you had mentioned that there was that strong earthquake after the massive earthquake back in 1970. So is there any relief on the tectonic plates? What could we possibly be getting into?
Good question. We'll ask, and I thank you for it. John Lin, what about it? There's a very direct concern, a house near the center of damage there, and considering going back with her mother. There have been a lot of aftershocks over the weekend. When you look out, is there anything you can say? Is there anything that can be predicted or not?
Well, there are two things that we know. One is that aftershocks of this earthquake of Saturday were continued for a significant period of time. And that's because this earthquake was so large, it was magnitude 8.8. However, we should put it in respect of the last major earthquake, which is 1960, which is measured at magnitude 9.5, which is the largest instrument recorded earthquake on Earth. Now, I can tell you how big that earthquake is. If you think of this one is big, the energy released by 1960 earthquake is something like a 15 to 30 times even more than the one of Saturday. And another measure of how powerful that earthquake was that the tsunami, which in the town of where our caller just mentioned, during this earthquake was about 8 feet. But during the 1960 earthquake and the tsunami in the same town was 10 times higher. It's something like 80 feet.
Oh, my God.
80 feet.
Wow.
So to answer your caller's question, whether the chances of another major earthquake on this particular place are going to occur again, I think because the Saturday's earthquake was big enough, I think it has released a lot of stresses on this fault. But remember, this is an area where, because the plate moved together very fast, it's one of the fastest places on Earth. That means the stress buildup is actually quite fast. That means that, especially now, the segment to the north of where the Saturday's earthquake occurred, are likely now to build up stress even more. And those are places that scientists are really need to look at.
John Lin, you've been very generous with your insights and knowledge today, and we're very grateful to you for being with us. Geophysicist at the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution joining us today from Menlo Park, California. John Lin, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Tom, for having me.
And John Price, your thoughts as we look out now on these two countries in the hemisphere, Haiti and Chile, both struggling with big quakes, very different death tolls, very different, you know, pictures coming out of these two countries. The contrast is sharp. John Lynn reminds us these were different quakes, but they also hit very different countries. It's all in your turf. Your thoughts?
No, it's a great point. Really, Haiti and Chile represent the two polar extremes of Latin American Caribbean countries, Haiti being the poorest, the least developed by almost every measure, and Chile being the wealthiest per capita, the most developed, the highest education levels, one of the most stable democracies. We've seen power shift now democratically through several elections. And it's a country that has a great history of prudence, and this transcends sort of the politics of the country. These are people from the very beginning, from the time the Spaniards arrived. There was no easy wealth in Chile. It was all hard work, and there's a work ethic in that country that you'll find from one end of the country to the next, and the Chileans are very proud of. And I think that it will be Chileans, as opposed to the international community, that will bring that country forward and put this tragedy behind them. And I think Haiti, by contrast, although they're very resilient people, simply don't have the resources, the infrastructure, the skill sets within their own borders to do this alone. They need the help of the international community. And I think you'll see the reaction of the international community divided as such.
Of course, Haiti also, which had to deal with slavery and throwing it off and all the aftermath of that, and maybe still today. How about the comeback? Do you expect Chile's economy to work through this or to be really damaged by it?
The big drivers of the Chilean economy, which are mining, agriculture, other natural resources, are their ability to extract those and get them to global markets should not be gravely affected. It'll all depend on, I still haven't heard word on the status of the Valparaiso port. That's going to be critical. Mm-hmm. But I think Chile, within a few months, it will affect their economy this year, but I think you'll find that they'll be back up and growing again within a few months.
John Price with Kroll Associates in Miami. John, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you, John.
Listeners, thanks for joining us this hour. Our thoughts with Chile. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.